Hey everyone, welcome back to the Physician Syndicate podcast. I'm your host, Ronak, and today we have a really exciting episode. We have Jason Cassidy, the CEO of Shiny Docs. Jason, welcome to the show.
Ronak, thanks so much for having me on the show. I really enjoyed the first time we had a chance to speak, and I really appreciate the invitation to come on here.
Yeah, for sure. So before we delve into Shiny Docs and all the cool things that you guys are doing over there, I'm curious to just kick us off with a little bit about your background and why you decided to go into the entrepreneur space in general.
So I've always been a bit of an impatient person who likes to look and see how you can optimize things. If I see something that isn't working as well as it should, I like to play with it, pull it apart, see if there's something that can be optimized there. And software is a natural place to do that playing because the iterations are so fast. The risk is pretty low on breaking things. So it really made sense to get into that particular arena. And lucky for me, I guess it worked pretty well. Like, we've got a pretty successful company right now and are tackling some pretty challenging problems.
Yeah. Oh, very interesting. Yeah. I think that's really cool about software, that it is very fast to iterate. You can try things out, you can put it out there, test it out, see if there's product market fit, see if there's bugs in it, and can just iterate and lead to, you know, really advanced products pretty quickly. I think if you're going through something like hardware manufacturing, like manufacturing a car, aside from Tesla, I feel like a lot of them, they have to go through very slow changes just because retooling all their equipment, assembly line, things like that is quite difficult. As you know, our main audience is physicians, and I'm guessing that, you know, when you're going through, let's say, a surgery or procedure, it doesn't change up too often, too quickly. So that is one of the cool things about software. Plus, I think it can scale very rapidly, right? So, like, I'm sure you can push out your software to, you know, a new version of your software to a lot of your clients all at once. It's not a repeated sales cycle. So that is really interesting.
Yeah, it's funny that you say that, because as we started growing, let's say we were about 70 or 80 customers by the time we were 3 years old as a company, we were actually told to slow down on our releases because our customers wanted to stay up to date. But if we're releasing every 2 weeks with something new or interesting, and usually it was just, you know, a tweak to get a new deal, somebody wanted a feature, somebody wanted a slight change, so we'd release. And then a lot of our customers said, whoa, this is too much to keep up with. Just do this for us quarterly, which was cool. It was fine because it's like, oh, you want us to do less and you'll pay us the same money. That's neat. But I still want to innovate fast. Like, if Ronak comes to me and says, your software is great, but if you added this extra little thing, I think it would be even better, and then I'd buy it. We want that ability too. So there's always this push-pull of, we don't want to push our customers too hard to stay current, but at the same time, we don't want to miss an opportunity to help somebody else right away if it's just a simple way of changing our software.
Right. That's so fascinating. So I used to work at Facebook, and we used to have a software release cadence on a daily level. So, like, an individual software engineer can basically push out code to the entire billion plus user base every single day, constantly changing things. I just saw an interview with the CEO of Airbnb, and they were saying that they had a 6-month cadence where they really want to make sure the marketing team is aligned with the technology and product teams to make sure everything is just, like, packaged up really nicely. And you're at a quarterly level. That might be a nice balance between the two of them, where customers are still getting proper updates at a regular cadence, but you're still going slow enough where the customers aren't, like, scared away with just a whole bunch of changes all the time.
Yeah, and I think it might be just tuned to risk. Mm-hmm. If my Airbnb reservation is screwed up because of something that happened with the software, that it's kind of a big deal. Like, I mean, it's not as bad as a plane crashing, obviously, but if I end up in wherever, New York, and the place isn't ready, or they thought it was next week, you know, that's a bad software experience. And with Facebook, I mean, if somebody tries to friend somebody else, and I don't mean to trivialize it, but I mean, there's certain social things that I tried to like this and it failed. Okay, that's okay. I didn't travel to New York and fail to have a spot to stay. So there's different risk profiles associated with these things. And with our software too, we run the spectrum. We have some companies that are using it sparingly just for legal compliance reasons. And then we have others who are intensely using it for their operations, and every asset depends upon their ability to find this information. So anyway, short story long, I think the risk profile, which might speak well to your medical audience here, will really determine how often you want to make the change.
Right. And Jason, maybe around like 6 months ago, I had a chance to chat with you and really start understanding what you're doing at ShinyDocs. And I walked away thinking that this is a piece of software that just about any large organization or company can get more efficient and more organized and more streamlined. So almost everybody should at least take a look at what you're building. Do you want to maybe give a little bit of a background on just what ShinyDocs does and what you're trying to accomplish with it?
Oh yeah, for sure. ShinyDocs is an information management software platform, essentially. But for us, it's more about a thesis, a way of doing business that is counter to historically what has been intuitive. What I mean by that is most organizations are really good at being able to just dump their information somewhere. So whether it be a doctor taking notes, you can just save it to a shared drive, of course, or you can email it to somebody. That's easy. But we all know that that has some shortcomings associated with it. Like it's with respect to the ability to recall the information, with the ability to perhaps comply with legislation, law, and internal policy. What we did that was sort of a mistake, I'm going to say starting about 25 years ago, is let's invent some software, typically web-based, that is really good at doing the compliance, really good at doing the security, really good at doing this records management. And oh, by the way, it's awful for you as an end user. You need to put in a whole bunch of what we call metadata. I'm meeting with RONAC today, and here's what I've noticed. I got to fill in all this stuff. So much slower and more tedious than just writing down what you want and then clicking save. But it's good for the records management practice. So what we've had is an entire history of people who are in the information management business failing because they've been trying to deputize us all to do good information management. So what's ended up happening is we have these amazing tools, SharePoints and other things, that are really great at helping the records person and terrible for you. And then wondering why all the information is everywhere else. Why are we emailing this to each other? Why is it in the shared drive? Why is it on this USB thumb drive? And that's what we wanted to address as ShinyDocs. We came in and just said, who's doing a great job of information management? Well, Google's obvious. You don't build your website on Google. You don't build your doctor's office web experience on Google. You hang your shingle, you put your website up, and it learns what your hours of operations are, how many cell phones are in there right now. It creates this experience based upon the data that's out there rather than forcing you to do stuff. And that is the right approach. And that's exactly what ShinyDocs does for enterprises. Is we don't tell you how to do the work because you're going to do it whatever way you feel is appropriate. What we're going to do is come in behind transparently and then clean up the mess that people make and then make it serviceable so that you can actually do compliance and all this other cool stuff.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So if I translate this away from the enterprise world and just try to think about the equivalent of an individual, right? So I have a physical laptop, I have a phone, I have a bunch of thumb drives, I have some data in my email, I store data in a bunch of different places. And if for whatever reason I need a tax document from 3 years ago, I have no idea where it is. It's going to take me hours, if not days, to just like find that one document. And my understanding is what ShinyDocs is, it sort of like connects all these different things. So that way, whatever I'm looking for, I can get it really quickly. Am I understanding that correctly?
100%. Yep. It is more powerful to continuously monitor what you have and make it retrievable on demand. That is the most powerful thing you can do. It is more important than where is the data. I kind of don't care, is it on your laptop, is it on your phone or whatever. What matters is, can I recall that information when I need to, for policy, for law, to help my patient, whatever it is. So that's 100% our focus, is as long as whatever media that you're using to store information is being monitored, like we're checking it out every time information changes, then you're good. You don't have to put it somewhere. You don't have to label it properly. You don't have to forget that. That's an old way of thinking. It's never worked. And the reason why we're not trillionaires yet at ChinyDocs is because the memo hasn't really gone out to the industry. We are buried in data. We are completely, like, the ability for us as humans to manage this information is long past. That was gone back before 2007. Yet somehow we're still, soldiering along, trying to put it in the right box and put the right label on it. It's dead, but it doesn't have the sense to lie down. So you will see more and more players like us entering the market who is saying, people are messy, life is messy, we're going to automate cleaning it up.
I really appreciate how you said you're not a trillionaire yet. I literally think that every company could be a customer of yours. That's really cool.
Well, thank you.
So let me ask you this, Jason. So we'll come to the employee side in a second, but from the employer side, the CEO or CFO, the person that's running the company, really thinking about efficiencies, their margins, compliance, all things like that. What's the value proposition for the people at the top of an organization for implementing ChinyDocs into their organization?
Well, either sad or practical reality is that from the top of an organization, you think about three things. Number one is, how do I make more money? And money can be different things. Like if you're a government organization, it might be ensure that my constituents are happy enough that they vote for me again. There's all sorts of victory points that I'm just going to call money. How do you make more money with the same resources? Is the best question that any board or leader can ask. Then the next best question is, how can I make the same money with less resources? And the third question is, I wish it was, how can I be the best compliance, best corporate, the best social citizen I can be? Unfortunately, that's not the way that the game is designed. The game is more designed as, what can I get away with not doing and still get one of the first two, more money or the same money with less? What can I get away with not doing? And so the most important thing is to align your information supporting those three activities. What you don't know can get you into trouble. And quite often when we're working with customers, and this is one of the reasons why I'm kind of sparing when I give lots of customer examples, because sometimes they failed an audit where they were supposed to keep track of a lot of information. And even though they had, bought the tools and they were paying the big enterprise management company to do something or other, they just weren't using the tools, quote unquote, properly, and they got their butt kicked through some compliance issue. So then ChinyDocs drafts in behind and says, yeah, sorry, you can't get compliance through trying to force people to do things. You actually have to do it a different way. So anyway, this is what the leaders are thinking of. So when we come in and start talking to them, we throw out these challenge questions like, why do you migrate to the cloud? And they'll say, well, because we get better applications and these types of things, which isn't true. The reason that you migrate to the cloud is you don't want to have IT resources anymore, and you don't want to have a hardware bill. You don't want to have capital costs. You trade complexity for the simplicity of a SaaS bill. And if you think you're getting more than that, you better be getting more than that. That's what I mean. There's some orthodoxies that are out there right now that these leaders need to understand as they start investing in, how do I use information to make more money or make the same amount of money with less resources, or have it support me so that I don't go to jail as I run lean.
Right. And I would think at a place like a hospital, that would be very important, right? You have doctors and nurses that are always talking to each other about all these different patients that they're having to manage. And if you miss a little bit of communication, it doesn't get into the specific EMR system or whatever it is, that could be a big, big problem. Easily could lead to a lawsuit. So by connecting all the communication channels, whatever final documentation is put together, I would imagine that this would help save hospitals from possibly going to litigation situations, just from a compliance standpoint. Is that fair?
That is 100% fair. That happens all the time. It's where, best case scenario is you can only find what you can find, and that's it. Worst case scenario is you can only find what you can find to support yourself in, say, a litigation scenario, but opposing counsel comes in and finds stuff that can be used against you that perhaps you should have known about or you should have produced during discovery. this type of stuff happens all the time. It's embarrassing. It's messy. And what a lot of organizations do is just hide behind complexity, you know, security through obscurity, and go, well, you can't reasonably expect me to go to every laptop and to every thumb drive and to every capture of conversation and find out what people said. And then the magistrate or the judge or whatever will go, yeah, somebody's severely injured over here. Yes, I expect you to keep track of the information that's going to support their well-being, or, you know, even the insurance claim associated with it. So come on. So there is this kind of arms race between people just barely doing what's good enough, or understanding that you can do a lot by inverting your thinking and stop worrying about where the information's just, where, what box it's in and what label it is, and just start thinking about how you're going to use it. Continuously be able to ask, where is my information? What is it?
Right. And with the internet and with technology and software being so scalable today, going through all your employees' laptops sounds relatively reasonable to me. That doesn't sound like a Herculean task. And just having the right software and programs to be able to do that should be kind of table stakes.
It should be. It is. I mean, we're not the only vendor who can do this. We want to go through every file share. We want to monitor your laptops. And the whole idea is not to see whether or not you're a good employee or bad. That's a practice that an employer can decide whether or not that's important to him. For us, it is just the practical reality of something important for somebody within your business is probably somewhere outside of an area they can find. Why not make it findable? Right. And a hot topic lately is artificial intelligence and ChatGPT. Like, you wonder how all that information got into the large language model in the first place. And the sad reality is it's for OpenAI, it's my understanding that Kenyans are being, literally in Kenya, people are being paid $2 an hour to curate data from the internet to create the model. And that's not a great use of people's time. I wish they were doing, you know, solving more interesting problems. But unfortunately, that's the best we got. What we should be doing is constantly be curating our information so it is usable by something like a large language model, so that we don't have to have humans manually pouring through it. Like, it's AI isn't very artificial when it's literally been curated by somebody who's making $16 a day to stare at the Internet Movie Database or you know, like Wikipedia or something like that. So anyway, short story really long. To me, this is the future of continuously monitoring information wherever it is. And if it's on your laptop, don't worry about, I mean, we will worry about privacy, but the reward is fantastic if people are finding the right piece of information at the right time. The AI is properly fueled so that it'll answer questions accurately. Like, there's massive payback of this different way of thinking.
Yeah, so let's double click on that AI side of things. Like you said, that's clearly a very hot topic right now. If we ignore the technical side for just a second and just focus on the business side, you as the CEO, have you started talking about the company in a different way just because AI is getting very hot? Like, I think a lot of startups are just adding .AI to the end of their name because they get a higher valuation that way. We saw that in the past with the crypto world or the metaverse world, whatever is the hot topic of the moment. Just from like a business standpoint, how do you think about like whatever's trending in the you know, the buzzwords at the moment versus what you guys are actually doing?
Yeah, I've never had, like, customers are interested in AI. They want to have the conversation. I'm glad that we have a story there that's compelling. We prepare the information that you have that's proprietary for you, that stuff that only you know about your own business. We do prepare that for use with things like large language models, for use for search, so that humans can find it. So it's very practical. Conversely, though, like, no customer just phones up and say, hey, I want 3 units of AI. How much would you pay for that? And that's kind of the conversation that's being had right out there right now, is that it's like there's some very, what I'm going to call, cool generic use cases of things like ChatGPT, where it can write you an essay on based upon anything it has within its memory, or you know, that database, that 170 billion data points or whatever it is. Super. It can do that. But if your information that you need is not in there, and it's not obviously the information that you need, it can't help you. So the complete AI, and I always give the example, I'm standing at Home Depot and I ask, hey, computer, do I need the 20 by 25 by one furnace filter, or do I need the 20 by 16 by one, or do I need something else? And the computer goes, I know for sure that you have this type of furnace in your house, and this is the size of furnace filter that you need. That's the goal of any computing system, is to answer questions quickly. So preparing the information for that is by far the most important thing. So back to what you're saying, is like, people don't even know to ask for that. What they're saying is like, I know I'm supposed to be using AI, and I know AI is going to solve problems. So how do we do that? But I'm not just going to pay you for AI. There's a little bit of a pigpen confusion right now around it. So apologize for the long answer, but it is complicated right now.
Yeah, that's actually really interesting. So one of my favorite ways that you've described ShinyDocs to me before is that it's kind of like your own personal Google within your own organizational framework, right? You know, ShinyDocs is connected to all the different data sources. So you just type in whatever you're looking for and it'll go and find it. And obviously we're seeing Google and Bing go through a little bit of an evolution right now, where it's not just a text box, but now it's more of like a chat feature, like with these large language models. Do you foresee that with ShinyDocs as well? That, you know, I don't know exactly what the UI looks like, but I would imagine in the past it was kind of like a search box where you type in the few keywords that you're looking for and you find all the documents. Do you envision an evolution of the product to be more of like a conversation?
It's what's cool is it already is that, by virtue of the fact that we've created this, we've created large language models out of some of the data sets that we have. We have that, quote unquote, we didn't build it. Why would we build it? There's open source projects already to build conversational AI. We just fuel it with the data. And that's kind of the interesting thing. If people only walk away with one nugget of knowledge from this conversation, I hope it's this exact following thing. Google and Bing and ChatGPT and Bard and these other things are not good because they understand your query and give you the answer. They're good because they have been enriched with the right information, and they have been given context of what it even means to be the right information. So when you think of something simple like, hey, ChatGPT, pick a restaurant for me tonight. I feel like eating Thai food. It will pick a restaurant from you, but how does it even know what a restaurant is? How does it know what's on the menu? How does it know the hours of operation? All this kind of stuff. There's a lot of work that went in the background to prepare that and connect that data to create that wonderful user experience. That's the thing that you need behind your firewall in order to have amazing outcomes with information. So because people say, oh, well, show me your search UI. It must be better because you guys sell search. And it's like, sort of. Our search UI kind of looks like Bing and Google. What we're actually selling is the automated ability to understand your data, to prepare it for search. It's subtle, but massively different. And I hope people are getting that from my words. I feel like I even overcomplicated it there. It's preparing your data to be found is the most important part of search. It's not having a cool UI or a conversational UI. It is, did you prepare your information enough so that it can be found correctly and in context?
So what I'm hearing is that I think by having all the context around the data, again, this leads to efficiencies at the end of the day. So earlier we talked about, like, if you're at the head of an organization, the CEO or CFO, you know, you're thinking about compliance. But as the individual, based on what you're saying about, like, not just have connected to the data, but having the context around the data, you could be a lot more efficient with your actual day-to-day workflows. So as an individual accountant or a doctor in a larger organization, you would be able to do your same work in a significantly smaller amount of time because the software has context around all of the data within the organization.
That's 100% correct. It is literally just answering the question super fast. Why does the Star Trek bridge computer answer the question accurately and in a snap? The Bat computer back in the 60s was awesome. It gave it back to you in a riddle, which sucked, but it still knew the answer. And you ask, how did it know this answer? Is it because it does speech to text and it can ask questions? No, it's because it has access to all the information and it's rationalized that information in a way that makes the questions answerable. And that's the real trick. And that, to me, that's the ultimate goal of this entire game, is to have, and I hate to nerd out, but I mean, to have the Star Trek bridge computer where you can just say, hey, computer, I need you to answer this proprietary difficult question about this activity within the hospital. And the computer just answers it like that. Now I don't need to do the Teams call to go and confirm with people. Now I don't need to go and do the truck roll and drive over to building B and check to make sure that things are that actually that way. The computer just knows and it just answered. So the question that I ask is, how did the computer know? And if you're not doing anything to make the computer know, you need to start now.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So I think in what we're seeing in AI, privacy is a big issue as well. So if I'm a customer of ShinyDoc, let's say I'm Pepsi, the soda company, or something like that, right? I have a lot of sensitive information, maybe my client list, maybe my financials before I report publicly, a whole bunch of different things. Can you maybe a little talk about like how privacy works with ShinyDoc and why customers should feel comfortable that their data is not going to get leaked or exposed just by introducing ShinyDocs into the ecosystem?
Yeah, like ShinyDocs doesn't do anything to make what I'm going to call an elevation of privilege. So we don't change who has access to anything. We are just making whatever people already have access to far easier to find. So we respect the original permissions. We respect like all of that. So you can't all of a sudden find something that you never had permissions to. It's not a thing. But part of that process is because we know every word on every page of every document, regardless of where it is. Now we can start doing some pretty cool things. Like you will have, let's say, an ERP system like an SAP or something else, Dynamics 365, whatever. Let's say, for example, we have every customer name that's ever been in there, every patient name, every patient ID. Through our system, pre-calculate that search. And then label every document that says this has a patient name in it. This has a patient ID in it. This has this type of information. So pre-calculate every search. And we've literally had customers that have calculated a trillion data points, pre-calculated. And then it becomes like Best Buy shopping for your information. So when it comes to privacy, when you can quickly ask, okay, ShinyDoc system with a cool graph, show me all of the documents that have PII in it, personally identifiable information, that is outside of one of our secure areas, like the file share or like this. Oh, and then we'll see. Okay, all of these laptops have personally identifiable information. All these thumb drives do. All of these other locations that we've looked at do. And then you can go, well, that's interesting. Perhaps we should remediate that. So the idea of doing privacy without abject certainty that you've looked at where all the documents are is not a thing. So any company that says that we do privacy better have the ability to interrogate every document, every database. Otherwise, they don't actually do privacy. Just saying, well, I will monitor only the documents that I feel like isn't actually solving the problem.
Right. So just to double click there. So you said the permissions don't change on any documents or any data that's out there, but the ShinyDoc software needs to have the permissions of the IT team or the administrator accounts to be able to have access to them. But when the ShinyDoc software like reads through all the data and gets everything organized, none of that data is getting sent outside the organization.
That's correct. Yeah, we have yet to build our fully come as you are, swipe your credit card, private cloud or public cloud version, because like everybody during a proof of concept asks for that. They're like, I want to try this thing and you guys just set it up and run it for me. But as we get deeper with the customer, they're like, well, we got this file share that's HR only. We've got like ITAR compliance where you can't have US information coming to Canada and conversely, and this stuff can't leave Europe. And all of a sudden it's the practical complexity of data residency and all these things come into play, where you realize it's not, just a public cloud thing. there's all sorts of rules and regulations that we need to follow. So it makes sense to have a hybrid experience where some stuff is private and on-prem, some stuff is going to be in a cloud. And what's kind of fun, actually, is we've invented a number of technologies that have been around forever. We just use them in this cool way of being able to do comparisons. Like, for example, using cryptographically secure hashes, we can check and see where duplicates are across different geographies without actually exposing the contents of those documents. That's handy. So we can use AI models that will do likeness searches where you can't reverse engineer the model to see what it was originally looking at. But then we can go and say, okay, all of these documents here were deemed to be something that needs to be secured in a certain way. Let's create an AI model out of that. Let's agree through some data science that we can't reverse engineer the data model to get the original data. And once we agree on that, let's go run it in a different geography and see how many documents it finds that matches the patterns over here. So you can start doing some pretty cool stuff in order to solve real life business problems. I want to know where all the personally identifiable information is. I want to be compliant. I don't want to get my butt kicked when we get hacked. So these are the, to me, kind of easy things that can be done. But at the same time, people need to pay for them. And generally, they pay for them as they're getting their butt kicked. And it's not so cheap and so easy yet that people will just proactively, you know, it only costs me $1 a month to go do my trillion files. So I'll do that. We're not quite there yet. So it is something that we need. We're hoping that leadership has some prioritization around this compliance and this efficiency of people not having to collaborate to find everything.
That's really cool. I really like that idea of using this service to like find duplicate data. I think that's entire business model in of itself to help companies get a little bit more cleaned up. But Jason, let's move over to the entrepreneurship side for just a second. I know you are a very talented engineer. When you were starting Shiny Docs, if I recall correctly, you wrote the first lines of code for Shiny Docs. I'm curious to get your take on how much you did by yourself before hiring a technical team and sort of like how that evolution worked out for you of going from like writing code on a day-to-day basis to sort of managing the company from a more business focus.
Yeah, it was like in my earliest years, I was a lone wolf coder. I would do all sorts of things and and I would do it for other people. I just get paid money to write some code. And there's a long history of some cool stuff that would happen. But around the time I was about 25, I got to be part of a bigger company, build a team up to about 40 or 50 people. So I got lots of experience at a young age of running R&D organizations and building technology, where I had to go through this experience of being the original innovator who was writing the lines of code to then being the manager or director who was then, you know, working with the customers more directly. I did find I had a particular affinity for solutioning with customers. So that's where I belong, is solutioning with customers, because I know what's possible, even when other people don't, and generally see shortcuts to get there, which people want. Like they want to get there fast. They want to get there cheap. They want to fail fast if it's something experimental. So that's my particular skill set. So when it came to Shiny Docs, we took a big swing here. Like we said, what's the biggest problem with information in the world? And that is that 80% of it is just dark. It's inaccessible. It's useful, but people can't find it. Well, let's start hacking away at this big problem. So some of the original innovations that happened were stuff that I just did myself, like bringing in, you know, big graph databases in populating them with this information and all sorts of cool ways of finding similarities between content without actually seeing the content. Millions of things that I just did because I'm like, okay, I see the shortcut. I see how my previous knowledge will do this. But at the same time, right away, I know I don't scale. I only have 168 hours a week. I should probably sleep and spend some time with my family as well. So the tech team happened very quick. We hired an extremely talented technology team, extremely talented customer service people, because again, none of this matters unless other people are using it. Just because I build the coolest thing and it's sitting on my computer and nobody's using it, that's useless. So it was just kind of a natural fit for me. Luckily, on somebody else's dime, I learned how to scale. And then I applied it here. the area that I bloodied my nose most is just running into the fact that selling to innovative people who either have extreme pain because they need our solution, or people who really want to solve this problem, is I resonate with them so well. Selling to late market and laggards, I need help. It's just because my speech is inspirational. It's like, okay, you don't even want to solve this problem. And quite often the majority of people out there, and I get it, are just saying, send me the white paper, give me the checklist, send me the bill. And I want the outcome, and I don't want to think too hard about it. I just want to buy the thing that everybody else is buying in order to solve this problem. And the problem is the thing that everybody else is buying doesn't exist yet. There's a flurry of some innovators like myself creating it. So I need to plow through. Definitely there are, everything from nuclear power plants to oil and gas companies to hospitals that need this solution, but they don't know they need the solution. They don't know it exists. They don't know what to ask for. And quite frankly, some people that are in leadership roles in those organizations are resistant to being an innovator. So that's the area where I struggle. And that's the coolest spot where I brought in sales leadership and others who are like, Jason, I got this. I understand how to talk to people. We bring them along. They can't swallow the elephant in one bite. We pick away at them, and they eventually become our customer and our friend. So again, a long answer, but the entrepreneur journey for an innovator is fun and interesting until you have to make it a big scalable business. Then you definitely need help.
That's so interesting. I mean, you're talking about these large organizations that can clearly benefit from this, but they almost need a large amount of education to understand why they need this, right? Yep. So it's not just creating a cool and important product, but it's also the proper marketing and education piece also. And as you start scaling the company, thinking about hiring people that have that specific talent, not necessarily just the people that are working on the core product itself. That sounds like a really interesting, like, just scale for the company. And, I know ShinyDocs just raised quite a large Series A round, and I'm guessing a good portion of that money is going towards this marketing challenge. Is that right?
Yeah, more than 60% of that money is going towards the marketing challenge. It is getting in front of more people. And it's kind of a blessing right now, the transformation that's happening in industry. The fact recessionary pressure actually, in my opinion, avails the better companies, the better technology, the better ideas. Mm-hmm. They're kind of the only thing that's left standing, because people know that they need to do a little bit more with less at that time. So they start looking for this type of solution. So I do like the pain that we're encountering right now, in a sense, of this recessionary pressure. I do like the fact that, post-pandemic, people are open to try something new. They kind of want to quit their old job and try something new. So I feel like we're not in survival mode right now. We're in thriving mode, but cautiously. We're not going to just blow all the money over the next 2 months and hope for the best. We're just cautiously understanding that as long as we continuously improve and get that message out there, that the rewards will continue to come. And anyway, short story long, 60% plus into marketing. And of course, the other 40%, when we talk about, building the core business and then building the product, it's not that I need a better AI. I don't need a better product right now. But what I do need is it to be super easy for people to try and enjoy the product. So that's the effort that we're putting in, is better user experiences, better interfaces. We're investing in public and private cloud right now so that people don't have to have IT resources and other things. So that other 40% still going to good work, and it's about making this thing as slippery as possible.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So my take is that there are good investors and bad investors, that when an entrepreneur is raising money, it's not just a check that comes in the door, it's the investor that comes along for the ride as well. So I know First Ascent Ventures was your lead venture capital firm for your Series A round. I'm curious, what was it about First Ascent that got you excited to work with them? Outside of the sheer money aspect, anything about them as an investor that gets you excited to partner with them?
The thing that there's a couple of things, and easy to enumerate. One, they understood what this industry really needs. And like the chairman of the fund, Mr. Tom Jenkins, he was the CEO of OpenText, from 5 or 6 people right up to $1 billion in revenue. He's still the chairman of the board there. It's, I mean, obviously a massively successful company. And it's Richard Black, who's their managing director, he was on the board throughout that entire journey. They get the industry, and they get that what we're doing isn't something, just because it's what, in my opinion, the best idea, doesn't mean everybody's just going to buy it overnight. We need to put in the effort and do the work. So as we started talking to them, it was just different than talking to everybody else. Everybody else was, okay, Jason, you're an intriguing talker. You got some cool logos. Essentially, they wanted to invest in a, you know, a hockey stick on a Excel spreadsheet. Whereas the conversations with First Ascent was, they get the market. Of course, they want the hockey stick. It's, I mean, everybody wants to get paid at some point. But it was, they get it, and they get that it's, we're making a best guess on when the hockey stick happens, but it's not a guess on where the industry's headed. This is, there's a great deal of evidence here. They're coaching me. They spend a lot of time with me, Jason, making sure that I'm just executing to the best of my ability. I like the supportive nature that we're purposeful rather than just investing in a spreadsheet. So short story long, I really liked the First Ascent experience. And quite frankly, that's just a label. That's a brand. I like just talking about, you know, like Richard and Amanda and Michael and Noah and Tef and everybody that's out there, and Tom kind of in the background coaching them as well. I just love the experience that I've had with them. And that's the reason. And Catherine as well, who introduced us. I love that experience that we've had with them. They're going to make us better.
Yeah, that's awesome to hear. And maybe just one final question. We have a lot of physicians on this podcast, and we focus a lot on both angel investing and entrepreneurship. So if there is a physician out there that's currently practicing medicine and thinking about doing their own startup, any advice that you would give to somebody that's just starting a company for the first time, and just any kind of, let's just stick with that, advice that you would give an entrepreneur that's thinking about dipping their toes in for the first time?
The beauty of when we talk about somebody who's a medical doctor is they're going to be an expert in something. The same, either they're going to go into a medical field, and then that's obvious, or the fact that they were capable of learning and retaining so much information to become a medical doctor is the reason why they're going to be an expert in X that is going to fuel their business. It's really triple down on why you as the entrepreneur. For me, it was easy. I've been in this industry for 30 years. I've been working with customers for a long time. I know beyond the pain points. I just know exactly where this industry needs to go, and I'm going to drag the industry along kicking and screaming. Some people won't like it. That's okay. It's so much easier to do that than be what I'm going to call a boy band. You know, like these boy bands who are put together, they have tryouts, and whoever has the best voice and looks the cutest are going to be the ones that get to be part of the boy band. There's so many companies out there that are just boy bands. That's, you know, they get a $20 million check. Here's an industry to go after. Maybe you'll get lucky and do it. I don't know why the CEO has any business being part of this. They're just a good operator who has a degree from some cool school. I kind of don't like those companies. You know what I mean? It's just the beauty of being the doctor who wants to be an entrepreneur is you're the expert. Keep crushing it, being the expert. But of course, bring in the right people at the right time, because you're probably not an expert at growing and scaling a business. I'm not either. So it's just, but be purposeful and you'll be fine.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you so much, Jason. We'll be sure to leave a link to your LinkedIn account, as well as a link to the Shiny Docs website in the show notes. But I really appreciate you coming on the podcast like this. Thank you.
Yeah, it's so much fun. Thanks a lot, Ronak.
Thank you for tuning in to today's episode. As always, we'd like to remind you that the information and opinions expressed on this podcast are for educational and entertainment purposes only and should not be construed as financial or investment advice. Before making any investment decisions, we strongly recommend that you consult with your lawyer, tax professional, and financial planner. Keep in mind that investing in startups can be extremely risky, and there's a potential for loss of your entire investment. Remember to always conduct thorough research and consider your risk tolerance before making any financial decisions. Stay informed, and we look forward to having you join us on our next episode of the Physician Syndicate podcast.